Who with it now? Welcome to the Pride of Detroit podcast, the PODcast. We call it that for a reason, prideofdetroit.com. Pride of Detroit on Twitter and on Facebook. Everything you need about your Lions news, analysis, and fan needs. That's the Detroit Lions of the NFL. We got to make that clear. I am Chris Lemieux at Detroit Southern, head of this fatal four-way in here, as always, with fearless leader Jeremy Reisman at Detroit on Lion. Hello, Jeremy.
How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right. Ryan Matthews is here as well, fantasy writer and editor at Ryan POD. Hello, Ryan.
Hello.
And Alex Reno at Alex underscore Reno.
How's it going, Chris?
You don't need to yell into the thing. I've been trying to make you loud enough, but you don't need to yell at it.
Apparently I do.
You're good, man. God. Okay. It's training camp time.
We're all a little giddy for training camp, I think.
We are.
This is going to be a little off the walls.
It's Christmas Eve, baby.
It is Christmas Eve. I've made like a whole batch of vodka sauce with my people, my Italian-American people, and we are all ready for Lions training camp.
I can smell the vodka from here.
The alcohol gets burned off, Jeremy.
Oh, okay.
That doesn't account for the vodka I'm drinking, but it gets burned off when you're cooking. But we're not talking about cooking. We're talking about the Detroit Lions.
Let's do it.
First things first, before we get to training camp, we're going to talk a lot about training camp. We have our mailbag. ListCast is over, people. We love ListCast. We had so much fun. We want to do another one on inside linebackers, but we've run out of time, Ryan.
I mean, it's fine. We'll bring him back next year. I know you guys will be pining for him the entire season.
We all had DeAndre Levy 1-5, right?
DeAndre Levy didn't make my top five.
No, he did.
The Chilean Parasite was number one.
Get out of here.
Fair enough. Undefeated.
I'm not saying anything. What I am going to talk about is Anquan Boldin. The Detroit Lions signed former San Francisco 49er, former Raven, former Arizona Cardinal, Anquan Boldin to a one-year $2.75 million deal on Thursday. And what? He's now got to be like the solid number three receiver right now? Is that how I'm reading this situation, guys?
I think with the kind of money he got paid, he's going to be the number three receiver.
Yeah, $2.75 million. He's already got $750,000 in a signing bonus. He's not a camp body. He's here to stay. He is absolutely here to stay. He's going to make the roster.
So is there guaranteed money then for that?
The signing bonus, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, like you were saying, he's not going to be one of those veterans that just they sign to, as your favorite term is, kick the tires on. And, you know, if it doesn't work out, they're going to cut him. They signed him fully knowing, fully expecting this guy to stick around and contribute to this team this year.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about how much we hate that term, kick the tires. Like, that's not part of our schedule on the Detroit Lions PODcast. But I like this guy a lot. Like, you guys know that. Like, me and Ryan, you were hyper excited for this guy, too.
Yeah, I was hyper excited when it was just kind of like a...
It was a workout in June, right?
Yeah, I mean, back when it was a workout and he was just coming in, we thought that maybe it was just because of the Caldwell relationship that he had with the head coach. I thought it wasn't going to materialize into anything, but here we are, like a month later, a little over a month later, and Anquan Boldin's on the team. I don't have a problem with it. I mean, we had a spot. I think that we needed a third receiver, like a veteran presence, because as much as... Well, we can get into TJ Jones stuff, but go ahead.
No, that's really... I didn't really have much here, but since we're talking about him, like, you know, yeah, he's going to be 36 in October, but can we just look at this guy's stats? Like, 789 yards last year and 2 years of over 1,000 to precede that. with the San Francisco 49ers. And that's with, by the way, like what? Colin Kaepernick is probably their best quarterback in that stretch. And that's after 2012 Colin Kaepernick. That's Kaepernick going downhill. And in 2015, that's Blaine Gabbert as well. Like, and yeah, sure. Like in those years, he is the number one receiving target for the San Francisco 49ers. And he's probably not going to do that as what is undoubtedly probably, I'd say, what, number three on the Lions roster before any injuries. Like, he's not going to surpass a Tate or a Jones. He's probably going to be the slot receiver most of the time. But like, he's still, what was that stat you had, Jeremy, about his drop passes?
I don't have the exact stat in front of me, but basically the guy barely dropped. He had one season, I think 2014 or 2013, that was like a huge anomaly where he had like 11 drops. But outside of that, it's been like four at most for a season. He's going to be probably the most sure-handed guy on the team. And the Lions already have a lot of sure-handed guys. So he kind of fits the mold of what they're trying to build there. And then my favorite part about the signing is just, like, I think he fits in really well with what the Lions need. The Lions need that guy that can jump up, be a possession receiver. They don't need necessarily a guy that can be agile and quick. They got that in Tate. They got that in Theo Riddick. They need a guy who can just, like, go out there and essentially be a second tight end to Eric Ebron. And that's what I'm excited to see, kind of like two tight end sets almost with Anquan and Ebron out there.
Yeah, you were talking about, like, pseudo two tight end sets with just, like, lining Bolden up in the slot and Ebron like opposite side of the field and just letting them two go. And like, yeah, as you say, possession stats, 3-4 yards, whatever you need to just get that first down out of Matthew Stafford.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean, the other thing that's really interesting about the Bolden signing is that now we have a receiver who's a legitimate threat as well in the red zone. I mean, not to say that Tate isn't, but I think that Tate is kind of limited in the red zone in what he can do. And then I'm not really sure what to make of Marvin Jones quite yet in the red zone. But 19 targets in the red zone for Bolden last year, 10 catches. He actually was like one of the top receivers in terms of the percentage of catches that he was making in the red zone. So and he was up there in targets, too. So he's a guy who can go and get the ball at the catch point. Like Jeremy was talking about, one of those guys who can, you know, be aggressive and still catch the ball and be a possession receiver, is pretty sure handed. So he does fit the mold. I mean, it's a veteran signing. It's a depth signing. It's one of the things that Caldwell talked about in his presser today. Right, Jeremy?
Yeah, he seemed very excited. And that's one thing that I think we can't overlook is the impact that Jim Caldwell had on this signing. I don't think Bolden comes to Detroit if Caldwell isn't the coach.
Well, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, that's a good point from Jeremy. How many years did they work together? Maybe 2 or 3 years together. I'm all for signing a dude and giving us some more competition at wide receiver and possibly pushing Corey Fuller off the roster.
Well, we're going to talk about the pup list in a second about Corey Fuller, but I think it's interesting we bring up the rest of the Lions wide receiver roster. And again, we're going to talk about the pup list in a second. But what do we make of the point afterwards? I know Dave Burkett was a little critical of the movie. He said, like, you can bring in Bolden, but it should not impact TJ Jones's development, which I don't really know what to make of that. I wasn't really high up on Jones to begin with. But, like, yeah, like, this definitely... Bolden, especially for the amount of money, like, we kind of had some questions, but after seeing the money, he's definitely like 3-4 right now. Like, he's no lower than 4, but like, where do we make of his place right now in this roster? Like, what does it do to the rest of the, you know, the Lions have so many wide receivers on the roster right now, between Andre Caldwell, Jay Lee, to Corey Fuller, who is
Jeremy Curley.
Yeah, I was just about to say Curley. I think Bolden's got to be 3, and then 4 and 5 are probably like TJ Jones and Curley battling it out.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, and what are those guys battling it out for at this point? Like a reception a game, if that. Because on top of those 3 or 4 receivers ahead of them, you got Eric Ebron, you've got Theo Riddick, and I mean, suddenly we're talking about 4, 5, 6 guys that are kind of a priority over this camp battle that might not even really end up mattering at all.
And I mean, I guess I, when you start to get so far down the the receiving depth chart, you start to think about what kind of roles that a player is going to have. And like you said, there probably isn't a whole lot of targets to go around. You start to think about special teams. And we got that quote out of Golden Tate today talking about how he still wanted to return punts this year. Not sure if that's going to happen, when you're maybe either 1A or 1B every time you're on the field as a receiving option. I don't know if you want to risk, his health back there returning punts. But, that's really where Jeremy Curley or, what TJ Jones really fits in is as a special teams player.
Yeah, that's probably how they'll win the spot. And it'll be interesting to see if the Lions go with Golden Tate as the punt returner, because he did okay in it last year. But I remember he took one big shot and then they backed off. They're like, oh, we're not going to do this anymore.
Yeah, I don't really know what else to say about it, really. It's like, I think this really just shakes up everything else. And probably a good transition into this is, like, Ryan, you had some observations about Corey Fuller. And I think when I wrote the article about the Anquan Boldin signing, I thought Corey Fuller was a dead man walking pretty much because of the, we have this ERFA guy, exclusive rights free agent, not really much to show for it in however many years he's been here. But you had some observations about him when it comes to the physically unable to perform list and what
right.
may or may not save Corey Fuller. Just talk about that a second.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, we talked about this a little bit privately, all of us did. But Kent brought this up in the Slack room, Mr. Math Bomb.
Shout out.
Corey Fuller's job could be saved by the fact that he's physically unable to perform. I mean, if he's not ready to go by season start, he won't count towards the 53-man roster if he's on the PUP list. Jeremy did some digging, and he found out today that right now he does count towards the 90-man roster, right?
Yep.
Right.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's a body on a roster right now. He helps fill out that number, but as we move towards the beginning of the season, if he's still on that PUP list by the time that the season starts, he can't come back until, is it week six or after week six?
I think he has to sit out 6 weeks. So.
He has to sit out 6 weeks. Okay, so, after that 6 week, either he can come back or, Jeremy and I think we talked about this a little bit outside of the podcast, but we talked about him being essentially a contingency plan. If the Lions experience another injury within those first 6 weeks Corey Fuller can maybe come in and, fill in some depth if anybody gets hurt. But, if those 6 weeks are over and you're still looking at the top of the Lions depth chart and you see Tate, Jones, and Boldin all healthy, I'm not too sure how Corey Fuller fits into the Lions plans or if he really deserves a spot on the roster, because like I just mentioned earlier, once you get past three and you start thinking about, either four wide receiver sets or, God forbid the Lions are ever really throwing out five wide receivers, because then we're trying to come back and win a game. But once you get so far down in that wide receiver depth chart, then you're really thinking about specialty roles that guys are filling, and Corey Fuller doesn't really fit that bill.
And this is football. Let's just make that clear. This is football, and injuries just are always around the bend. Like
football Americano. See.
I think with Fuller, my guess is what happens is even if like one or two guys are injured, I really don't see him as part of the team's plan. It would have to be kind of a dire situation if he's coming off the PUP list week seven.
Right. And the Lions like you'd have to have him jumping over again, like all these other guys you mentioned, Andre Caldwell, right. Jeremy Curley, TJ Jones. Like there'd be a lot of guys who would be above Fuller in any particular return and need on the depth chart to rise up.
Yeah. Right. Like how's he going to over jump Andre Caldwell when there's going to be some clear nepotism going on there?
And how do you feel if you're Jay Lee or Quinshad Davis? Like you pick the right situation for yourself. Like you want to join a team that has a thin wide receiver spot. And then all of a sudden we go out and sign a guy like Anquan Boldin.
Right.
Well, can we talk about the rest of the PUP list? Because I found it interesting here about Brandon Pettigrew. And can you guys convince me that I'm wrong that Brandon Pettigrew on the pup list. Like, unless something happens to Ebron, this is probably like the end of the line for him as a Detroit Lion.
I don't know. I don't know what their plan is with Pettigrew, because originally it seemed like they just cut him, but obviously he has this torn ACL. They can't cut him without reaching some sort of injury settlement.
Right, right. And that's going to cost him. He's definitely not taking the field again as a Detroit Lion.
I don't know. I wouldn't say that.
I'm not sure if that's completely ruled out.
Okay.
Because, I mean, they don't have any depth at tight end. I guess you consider they have a little more with Anquan Boldin on the roster if you want to consider him a tight end.
I really don't, but okay.
But he's their best blocking tight end then. And I think they're just hoping he's going to be ready by the regular season. Even if he's not, I wouldn't be surprised to keep him on the pup list and try to get him back in there at week 7. I mean, I don't know how. The thing is, we don't hear anything about how his ACL injury is doing. We don't hear anything about his rehabilitation. So I don't know how realistic it is that he'll be around for, you know, the beginning of the regular season. But if he's not, then the Lions are going to have to go out and probably sign a blocking tight end. And I don't really know who's available.
Well, we do have Cole Wick on the roster.
We do. From Incarnate World.
I call it Incarnate World.
Do we know if he can block, though?
Yeah, I'm being a bit of a smartass.
A bit.
I mean, a lot of people are projecting him to make the team just based on the depth, and I can definitely see that, especially if Pettigrew isn't ready.
I mean, that tight end is probably the weakest part of this depth chart right now.
For sure.
Like, even as we understand that that Bob Quinn has just been like this has been a work in progress to remake the depth chart, like, tight end still remains as shallow and tepid as ever, like, with only Eric Ebron really to show for it. And the whole reason we kind of hand-wring over Brandon Pettigrew is because Ebron can't really block.
Yeah.
And you need someone to block, which is Pettigrew.
And Pettigrew's an expensive cut. They just signed him to that extension, and one of the weirdest moves that they made a couple of years ago, they signed him to, I think, a 4-year extension, and everyone's like, what are you doing that for? And then they obviously go out and draft Eric Ebron, and it becomes even more strange. So.
Yeah, that Martin Mayhew legacy, just glorious and fantastic.
Well, I don't hate on Mayhew, but that to me is one of the weirdest moves that he made.
No, I'm not hating on Mayhew, but yeah, exactly what you just said there. That was just, it was a weird move. I was just... Yeah, it is what it is. Anything else about the pup list that we need to talk about, or Anquan Boldin?
Poor Brandon Copeland. We don't have anything to say about him.
Hardly knew you.
Mourn you till I join you. I think that's really about it. So let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about training camp. We've gotten here. Finally, we're going to be diving deep into the training camp list and getting everything you know. And then coming up later on the show, we're going to dive into the mailbag, because we always have the mailbag, and we're getting you guys ready for the season. Real quick, it's coming around the block. It's the end of June. July. Soon to be August, and then soon after that, September. So everything else. But first, training camp. We'll be right back. All right, before we begin this next segment, we need to make a correction. It's not Brandon Copeland. We did not mean to say RIP to Brandon Copeland. We meant to say, who again, Jeremy?
Corey Robinson.
Copeland's
actually got a very good chance to contribute this year as a defensive end.
Yes, thank you. Okay.
Just
covering our bases. It's been a long night. It's one of those things where you don't want to wake up.
I do want to wake up. I want to wake up every day. And the day I especially want to wake up for is tomorrow, because
training camp tomorrow being Friday, we're recording on Thursday. Let's talk about training camp, shall we?
I would love to talk about training camp.
Let's hear from the two guys that are going to be there Friday.
Two guys. There's going to be, well, wait, no, that's right. Ryan's going to be there Friday. I'm going to be there next, not this Saturday, next Saturday, like the 6th. I'll be there. Yeah.
Yeah, so Alex Reno and I are going to training camp tomorrow. You
Friday.
Can follow, yes, on
the
Friday.
The day this podcast is coming out.
July 29th, hopefully. Alex Reno and I will be at training camp. Hopefully it's not raining.
Or extremely muggy or hot.
You guys sound so excited. Jesus.
I'm excited. Alex isn't giving me anything. I'm excited. Let me tell you.
I'm excited.
Let's hear it. Because this is the thing, is that I've never been to training camp before. So this is going to be my first time. So I just want you to be easy with me. Be gentle.
Rena, what do you love? I've actually never been to a training camp practice myself. What to you is the draw? What makes you so excited about this?
Getting all those new Twitter follows?
That. I love the interaction with the fans on Twitter. I usually tend to send out a tweet before training camp and like ask everybody what players they want me to focus on. Usually after camp, I'll go through like 10 long tweets of what I saw, like a little recap. Talking to people while I'm there is a lot of fun. You can just tell on like...
What kind of people do you run into?
What kind of people do I run into? I mean, they're all just normal Lions fans. You don't get like the... They're like the good Lions fans. You don't get those same old Lions guys over there. They're all excited. They're all excited like you are to be there. They want to... They're all drinking the Kool-Aid, I guess.
Is anyone there wearing a hard hat, I guess, is the question.
I don't think so.
It might be a little hot for a hard hat tomorrow, but I
believe the guy working the lift, I guess.
Yeah. I was getting ready to go tomorrow, specifically with the mindset that I wasn't going to run into any like same old Lions fans, because I wouldn't consider any, you know, SOL fans to show up to a training camp at the end of July.
Exactly.
Especially when you have to go out and get a special wristband for it too.
Yeah. From your area four dealers.
Think Ford first. Are we getting paid for this?
Yeah, we're not giving out free sponsors like that.
No, no, God, no. No, I don't get paid for that.
All right, so that's a good transition into, like, what players are you going to be watching for, both you and Ryan?
I can't believe that I'm excited to watch offensive line play. But, I mean, how can I not be excited to see Taylor Decker at left tackle? Right? Mm-hmm. I mean... I'm excited to see him. I'm excited to see Anquan Boldin. This is so weird, but that was kind of like a late addition to my Christmas list that I found out was underneath the tree after I shook the present for a little while.
Do we know what number Anquan Boldin is going to be wearing? Because it can't
be 81. It better be 81.
You want it to be 81? Okay, okay.
I want it to be just because I want to see the world burn.
Yeah, I tweeted out that jersey of Anquan Boldin with an 81 Lions jersey, and people were not happy about it.
Not having it at all.
I mean, realistically, I mean, has he ever been any other number other than 81 in his career?
I'd probably have to go and look at his, like, high school number or something. I don't know. Or, like, his college number. I don't know.
No, I'm on Pro Football Reference right now, and it says 81.
His entire career, yeah. Yep, Arizona, Baltimore, San Francisco. He's been 81 everywhere he's been. I don't know if he's going to switch to 18, but that number is not retired.
It's not retired, but wait a year, right? Wait at least a year.
Hold up.
We're going to get into my hot take about jersey.
Was he actually number? He was number four at Florida State.
Receivers can't do that in the NFL.
Yeah, he can't.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Okay.
Quarterback number or kicker number.
You have to be what? You have to be 11 through 19 or 80 through 89.
Plus, I mean, the Lions should retire number four anyways.
Who wore number four?
See, this is why people think you aren't a Lions fan.
Dude, I have the memory of a slug. Cut me some slack.
He was drafted the year that I was born, Mr. Jason Hansen.
Oh, God damn it. Okay, yeah. No, look, I don't remember these things. I need the internet to remember things. I don't remember things.
This is the thing, is that a wise man once told me you should never memorize anything that you can look up.
Yeah, and I followed that thing to a T, and people say I'm not a fan. I don't like this.
That's all right.
Let me tell you how dumb it is to retire jersey numbers. It's dumb. Don't do it. It's stupid. It's been proven to be very dumb. Don't do it. Why would you do it? Tell me the reason why you should retire a jersey number.
Okay, Jackie Robinson, Michael Jordan. I can understand retiring those.
But no, like, don't even put them in the same breath.
Robinson, but I'm saying.
Yes. Michael Jordan, no.
You don't think Michael Jordan. Okay. We should save this for mailbag because we're getting way offhand. But.
Fine.
Okay. Like, yeah, no, you have to save. Do you think Roberto Clemente should have his number retired? We're way off the rails.
Who cares?
Training camp.
Okay, training camp, training camp, training camp. Okay.
Who are you excited to see?
I'm excited to see any of the new faces, like Bolden, Curly,
Jay Lee.
Come on. Steven Ridley. I don't know any of those guys. I'm also excited to see like which guys have improved since last year. So like Kyle Van Noy or Devin Taylor, I guess. For the rookies, like Ryan said, I'm pretty excited. Actually, I love the offensive line drills, like the one-on-one drills. Those are probably my favorite drills of all. So I want to see how Taylor Decker does in that. Definitely not excited to see Jake Rudock.
What about
I don't know about the other rookies.
What about Zach Zenner?
Who cares?
That's the right attitude to take.
We should care.
Hold on. Speaking of caring, should we care about Jace Billingsley?
Yeah, we should.
Absolutely.
Should always care about Jace Billingsley.
I'm hoping
Winnemucca's finest.
Something. I hope I hear at least something about him. Shout out to Winnemucca. But yeah, I mean, I know at this point it's not even to call it a long shot is to probably give him more credit than he really has a chance for.
Speaking of
the lines moved on. Basically,
yeah. Speaking of odds that got crushed by Anquan Bolden, Jace Billingsley. Yeah. Like,
but if I were to one of the guys no one's mentioned yet that I'm really interested in is Killebrew. Miles Killebrew.
Killebrew. Yeah.
Because
I'm really
obviously
excited to see him.
Yeah, strong safety is obviously a big position of need right now, and you know, the Lions don't know if they're starting Raphael Bush there or Tavon Wilson or maybe even Killebrew can jump into that starting lineup. I don't think it's gonna happen right away, but he's coming from Southern Utah, a real small school. But if you look at his highlight reel, it's amazing.
It's great.
He's laying the boom on some guys. And I really want to see if he can kind of get up to par quick in the NFL and do more of that.
That's FCS, but still, like, man, he was just laying the wood on FCS players.
Yeah. I think I had an article, and the title was, Miles Killebrew is awesome, and here's why. I am super excited to watch him play. I think his case is probably one of those cases where he won't start until maybe like the middle of the season, but yeah, he's pretty raw.
Yeah.
All right. So I guess that's like that's who we expect to see, but like camp battles. I hate this term camp battle because I'm just expecting two guys to gather around like that one stage in Street Fighter where there's like people gathered in front of an F-16 jet. And there's like two guys fighting. That's all I think about when you say camp battle. Except instead of an F-16 jet, it's like a training facility and like a field goal post. But
okay.
That sounds like a you problem.
That does sound like a you
that
problem.
That is a you problem. That is a you problem. I played too much of Street Fighter 2. But like camp battles, like what camp battles are there? For someone who is apparently not a fan, please tell me about what camp battles there are.
Can I say my personal favorite that I'm looking forward to right
sure.
now?
Sure. Go
better
ahead.
Not be mine,
go ahead.
So go ahead and go first.
Long snapper.
Oh, for the love
not,
of
it. Not really, but if you haven't already, go check out Jeremy Reisman's long snapper article.
Are we going to do this to our favorite Moldak? RIP to the Moldozer?
If not,
I named my character. I named my character in Pokemon Go after Don Moldak.
We almost made it through the podcast without it.
I'm done with Pokemon Go now. Let's stop talking about it.
I've stopped playing too. I haven't played in a good week or so. But
check out the Moldozer post just to watch his highlights. Set to "You're the Best Around."
In all seriousness, though, I would say I'm probably most excited for wide receiver. We touched on it earlier about how stacked we are now that we signed Bolden. Probably wide receiver and the offensive line.
I would personally like to see whoever steps up alongside Amir Abdullah and Theo Riddick in the running back game because, like, yeah, you've got a receiving running back in Theo Riddick and you've got, I guess, a half-decent running back in Amir Abdullah who really needs to prove more, but, like, I don't believe in Zach Zenner The very first podcast, PODcast we did, was me not believing in Zach Zenner. And now you don't even have Joik Bell for the thing. Like, and I don't, what, is Stephen Ridley going to suddenly step up and be, like, running back number two out of the backfield? I don't.
We don't even know if he's going to be healthy.
Yeah. Like,
wait, running back two, that's got to be Amir for sure.
No, Amir is probably number one. I the problem is like, because this is running back by committee and because you have a guy who is so focused on reception, I don't know where to put Theo Riddick.
Right. He hasn't been a good runner.
He's not a good runner. I think he's like average on his career is like, what, 3 yards a carry, 4 yards a carry?
I think it's like 2.8.
It's abysmal.
It's below average, but...
But he also hasn't had the opportunities, especially behind a decent offensive line.
Sure, but we understand what he is right now, which is a receiving running back.
Right.
If he's coming out of the backfield, he's going to be catching a Matthew Stafford ball. Like, but like, who is the second running threat behind Amir Abdullah?
I don't think that Cooter will ever get that predictable. I don't think that the only time that you'll ever see Theo Riddick out on the field is if he can take the ball.
Sure. But I'm just saying, like, I mean, if Amir Abdullah gets hurt, who is your workhorse running back?
Zach Zenner, I guess.
It's such a rarity to have that anymore in the NFL, though. Like, how many people have workhorse running backs?
Sure, I guess. But again, this is just the trouble of talking.
A bruiser, though, right?
Yeah, this is
a short yardage bruiser.
This is so,
Garrett Blunt is not walking through that door.
We're playing the Michael Burton.
Burton is someone that no one has talked about in probably 7 months.
Burton's good for the counteraction and like one touchdown. I don't really think he's in this conversation.
George Wynn.
No. Special teams standout, George Wynn.
He could win the job over Zenner for that special teams role.
I guess. I mean, he already did, but...
It didn't last year. Zenner won it, but then Wynn jumped back up when Zenner got injured.
Zenner got his lights turned out. Okay,
Oh, come on.
Anyways,
I don't know. I agree. I think that the Lions, it's going to be interesting to see who steps up. They don't have that bruising back. They also don't have, I don't know if they really have a guy back there that they can put back there and be comfortable with him in pass protection. Because even like somebody like Zenner, like I remember watching last year, and Zenner was not very good at picking up blockers.
That seems like a thing that comes with experience, though.
That's true.
So. Michael Burton, I guess, he's a really good pass blocker, so I guess maybe we can...
The return of the fullback? We're going to have the fullback ascend to power?
Oh, man. Having Corey Schlesinger flashbacks right now.
Breaking face masks in training camp?
Ooh.
I want to see some Spider 2Y Banana with Michael Burton this year.
I think the camp battle that I'm most excited to see is probably the cornerback camp battle.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have a top dog, but then after that, we're not really sure where everybody's going to fit in.
Yeah.
I'm surprised no one mentioned Alex Carter as a guy they're excited to see.
I don't know what to make of Alex Carter. And then what do we make of...
That's why I'm excited to see. Like,
not even just,
I don't know.
Not even just corners. What do we make of the rest of the safeties? Like Glover Quinn, okay. Like he was... But what else?
Glover Quinn is like the leader of the secondary.
I love Glover Quinn.
Okay.
Too.
Okay.
I love Glover Quinn.
I don't think he's all that amazing, but he is our starting free safety, and there's no question that he's going to.
Okay, sure. But what about?
There's no battle with him.
The battling is happening like 2 through 4 for like cornerbacks. Like, I mean, that like there is no number two corner on this team. And
I mean,
training camp is going to decide who's going to be the number two cornerback. Is that not true?
I think Nevin Lawson has the job, and I think he did an adequate job last year.
But like you just said, you have not seen Alex Carter.
Right.
That's right.
But he also has not. He's not even participated in a training camp before, so he's going to be a little behind the eight ball.
We also have stats that say Nevin Lawson is good and Nevin Lawson is not good.
Right. From my own eyeball test, I think he falls kind of in the middle there. I think he's a little physical, and that's going to get him in trouble. But at the same time, like he helped us win a couple games down the stretch there. Our pass defense was pretty good in the second half of the season, and that's when he took over. All right, I think I have one more training camp battle that I'm excited for, And even though this isn't technically a starting position, it's the strong side linebacker position, because everyone is talking up Kyle Van Noy right now, and I don't buy it.
We're going to actually see Kyle Van Noy play?
Yeah, maybe.
Oh, my God.
Wait, and who's talking him up, though?
Well, he got a lot of praise during OTAs and minicamp. Okay. A lot of people saying he was... Caldwell himself said he looks a lot better, a lot more prepared and where he's supposed to be. I think he's a little bit thinner than he was years past. And so people are kind of penciling him as the quote-unquote starting strong side linebacker. And it's kind of hard to argue against it, because who's going to do it instead? Josh Bynes, maybe?
Yeah, it's not... I mean, you've got DeAndre Levy, but, like, yeah, the depth at linebacker isn't that great, to be honest.
No, I mean, you have your two starters with Levy on the weak side, Whitehead in the middle, and nothing else.
Yeah, no one to take the Sam position, no one to take any part in the depth chart if, God forbid, Levy gets hurt again, or if Whitehead gets hurt, and that leaves you with a gap up the middle. You're just going to revert to what we had in 2015, just people dinking and dunking for four or five yards over the middle, because there's no linebacker core to stop them. Like, there's a lot of questions on. I think defense is just interesting to see going into this training camp, because there's just so many questions on this defense.
Right. Like, they have playmakers at each level, but they also have kind of significant holes on each level.
Like, the defensive line, there is good depth on the defensive line, I feel.
But not really at defensive end.
Yeah, no. Yeah, that's even true. Like, even at defensive end, like defensive tackle, okay, you've got A'shaun Robinson. You expect to see him come in and take a starting job at any point in the season, but that's kind of dependent on either Tyron Walker or Haloti Ngata getting injured, or you're kind of saying at that point, Nada's going to fall off the table. But, yeah, defensive end, God forbid, what happens if Ziggy Ansah gets hurt? And then, yeah, like, everything else after that, like, the depth on defense is still a problem. Like, if anything that was a work in progress for Bob Quinn after the draft, it was still the defense. Like, and that's not getting fixed in 1 year. It's just not.
I think,
yeah. I mean, this also comes back to the idea that we have, I don't know, the Lions have a lot of pieces on defense that are really good, like, that are bordering on, like, you know, maybe an all pro season. You want to talk about Darius Slay. You want to talk about Ziggy Ansah. But at the same time, Caldwell wants to talk about all this depth that we have. And maybe we do have depth, but who's the number two corner? Like, who's the number two defensive end? Like, who's the, you know, who's the second guy? Like, I mean, we have DeAndre Levy, but, like, does everybody believe in Tahir Whitehead? Does everybody believe in, you know, Devin Taylor? I mean, there's so many question marks behind.
Does anyone believe
in
Tyron Walker? Like, Tyron Walker had that injury. Like,
a lot of question marks. I mean, yeah. A lot of depth, but a lot of question marks still.
Yeah, and I hate to ask this, but, like, how much can you really trust Terrell Austin right now, too? Like, he had that incredible year in 2014. I think they were 20-something last year.
This is a part that this is the thing that no one talks about, what you're about to talk about, how he did in 2015.
Yeah, and, like, everybody wants to crap on Lombardi, but I thought Austin did a pretty bad job himself. And, like, I thought he made some pretty awful personnel decisions last year. Like, I thought Tahir Whitehead played really good last year, and I have no idea why it took him so long to even put him on the field.
Yeah.
Detroit was 16th overall in defensive DVOA, and I'm pretty sure they were in, like, the low 20s.
Halfway through the season,
they were
in a bottom five offense, five defense.
Yeah.
It was horrible.
Yeah.
But
there's a lot to be said about that, is that, like, yeah, the offense is so bad, the defense is on the field nonstop. But again, like, that only goes so far.
Here's, to me, the most interesting thing about the 2016 defense is I think it's going to rely on a bunch of guys that Lions fans don't know anything about.
Yes.
So it'll be like Wallace Gilberry's, your John Bostic's, your Tavon Wilson's, these kind of depth guys who are, you know, they're going to have to play at least a little bit. Injuries are going to happen, or the Lions are going to use a rotation. And these guys we don't really know much about, and they're going to play pivotal roles. So
Well, yeah, they all weren't on the team last year.
Right.
Yeah, there's so many new faces on the defense, and I don't know. I mean, Terrell Austin, the year he had in 2015 wasn't the best year, obviously. There were a lot of ups and downs, you know, across the board for the entire team.
I think there's a lot to be said.
The one thing I want to say, though, is that what the 2015 team didn't have that the 2014 team did have is DeAndre Levy. Mm-hmm. And, like, he's going to be the most important piece of the entire defense, clearly, because of his versatility and his ability in coverage and run defense and so many things about DeAndre Levy that are so important. But I think that he's going to be the whole linchpin of the defense.
2014 also had Ndamukong Suh.
Ooh.
I don't think, hot take, DeAndre Levy was more important than the 2014
really?
Team than Suh was.
I want to explore this. I want to explore that at some point later in the future. I don't think this is the time, though, because I think we should, do we need to wrap up anything? What do you guys, before we move on to mailbag, what do you guys see about offense? And we've talked about this lack of depth on defense, but I don't know. We talked about wide receivers. We're kind of struggling a little bit with running backs. Quarterback is what it is. But what do we make of the offensive line right now? Is there good enough depth here going into depth chart? How do you feel about the offensive line, this unit that was routinely panned throughout 2015, and now we're trying to expect it to do better? Like, what do we make of this? Like, because, yeah, I mean, we got Jeff Schwartz. We've got, you know, number one draft pick.
Decker. Taylor Decker.
Taylor Decker. Yes, I'm sorry. I brain farted for a second. Taylor Decker and, like, everything else. But at the same time, I think it's going to be a young offensive line.
I think the biggest question marks that you have along the offensive line is clearly the interior three. Like, yes. You have, I think the guards are on a very short leash. It's going to really depend on how Warford bounces back. I mean, the year that Warford had in 2014 was, you know, almost like all pro level. Like, the guy was grading out incredibly. He was one of the best guards in football. And then 2015, he lays an entire dump, you know.
And what do we even make of Travis Swanson? Like, you know, speaking of battles, what's going to happen with
are we going to be able to make anything?
Yeah.
Are we going to be able to make anything of Travis Swanson? Is he going to lose his starting job? I mean, Stafford, I think, talked a little bit about the inexperience of having, like, a young center and what that kind of does for the offense.
You guys
today
know what I think about centers.
Conference.
You guys know what I think about centers.
Yeah, they're important. But I mean, think about back to the 2015 draft. First round pick, Laken Tomlinson. What is he going to do? Is he going to contribute?
That's the thing. Like, the linchpin of this offense is the offensive line. It needs to take a huge step this year to kind of transition into that more running based offense that I think we're going to see this year. And like you said, all these guys are going to be on a short leash. And the good news is that the line's brought in quite a bit of depth. Like, obviously the center battle, we have two options there. So if Travis Swanson doesn't go, they'll probably make the switch to Graham Glasgow. And I fully expect to see Jeff Schwartz play on that offensive line at some point in this year.
Time.
I think he's too valuable of a resource.
At this point, though, is he gonna play over another guard? Like, is he gonna play over Laken Tomlinson? And is everybody gonna be okay with Tomlinson not playing in his second year and think, okay, maybe he's just not ready?
Or is
Jeff Schwartz at this point, he's a veteran and he's just better than Tomlinson?
I don't think he starts right away. I think he's gonna.
You think Tomlinson loses that job?
I think if anyone, it's probably Warford who loses.
Oh, really?
The job. Yeah, and
I think Warford was hurt last year.
We'll see. I don't know. Yeah. I just think he's gonna have them in a very short leash, and we'll see Jeff Schwartz jump in there. You know, maybe in the middle of the game. Maybe he doesn't start, but maybe, like, you know, Larry Warford's having a terrible game. Let's put Schwartz in there. I think that's going to happen at least a couple times this year.
And then and I don't know. I think this comes back to, like, what I was saying. The question marks are at guard, center, guard. It's weird to think that I don't know why I'm convinced that the Lions are okay at tackle, or that I'm more concerned about their interior line play.
The good news, they have Michael Ola.
Yeah,
and they have Michael Ola. Yeah.
Let's take a quick break here, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the mailbag, all your questions from the week as we get ready for Lions training camp. It's the Pride of Detroit mailbag. It is always a thing. Harrington HOF asks, which is more exciting and or enjoyable to watch, college football or the NFL? Well, we are an NFL blog, and this is technically an NFL podcast, but we've got a, I mean, we all watch both NFL and college football here, right?
Yeah.
So, can we, without betraying Pride of Detroit, can we say, like, what we personally prefer?
I might be on the wrong podcast because I prefer college.
Me too. I prefer college. I really do. Like, it is, the offenses are far more varied. You see weird tricks there. And, like, I think it's because college is such an imperfect game that it's, like, it's more fun because weird stuff happens.
Like, I just love the atmosphere and the hype that goes into college
tailgating.
Games.
Tailgating. Maybe it's because the Lions don't have a good tailgate site, but I love tailgating. Like, I love going to my father with my father to South Bend, Indiana, for a Notre Dame tailgate.
You guys just hit on the dichotomy that I kind of go through. Live sports, it's hard to beat college football. That environment is crazy.
Well, even
people are going crazy. People are standing up the entire game. That's how you should watch football games. It's so awesome to be in the big house or, you know, wherever. I went to Florida and watched a bowl game there. It was insane.
Yeah, Notre Dame Stadium's the same way. Like all these stadiums, like, as long as you have enough students there, like, people will get up and cheer their butts off. And, like, even on TV, like, college football is so, like, the NFL schedule. Okay. 1 p.m. kickoff Eastern, 4:30 p.m. kickoff Eastern, Sunday night football. It's regimented. College football, like, it is an undiluted swarm that comes at your face starting at noon Eastern and doesn't end until like 2 a.m. if Hawaii has a home game.
I get that, but if we're talking TV alone, I'm full on the NFL bandwagon here. The competition is always a lot closer. You're not going to have these 45-3 games you have during the first 5 weeks of the season.
But you always have, like,
sometimes in the conference play. What?
I said, but even if you have one of those blowout games, there's like 8 other games on that you can just tune in.
That's true. But I mean, if we're just, you know, average football game versus average college game versus average NFL game, the competition is going to be a lot better in an NFL game. The play is going to be a lot more cleaner.
Usually.
We can't
say this about Jaguars games.
I mean, yeah, we're talking.
Are you rallying against your own fandom for the Jacksonville Jaguars?
Yeah.
What's happening right now?
You thump for the Jaguars every week on this podcast. I'm surprised to take a shot.
I mean, Jaguars in the past. I'm not talking about the 2016 roster.
Oh, bite your fucking tongue. David Garrard is one of the best quarterbacks of all time.
Dude, I love those old Jaguars teams. I used to play Madden 2001 with, like, Fred Taylor and Mark Brunell. And was Tom Coughlin still their coach in 2001?
Could have been. Probably was.
Yeah.
I don't know. If Jeremy, were you done?
Yeah, go for it.
I would rather watch NFL football. College football is... it's fine. Like, to watch on Saturdays, it's nice. Like, it's a nice way to get through my Saturdays just to get to Sunday. I don't know. I have, like, the same sentiment when it comes from, like, college basketball to professional basketball. I'd rather watch NBA 10 times out of 10 rather than watching college basketball. I think that there's something to this idea of college basketball or college football. If I want to get back on the question of, like, this, like, imperfect game where there's so many very different styles and everything, but I mean, there's just so many, like, blowouts, and I understand that there's so many other games to watch, but why am I invested in those other teams? Like, there's a finite amount of, like, teams in NFL football. There's 32. There's going to be however many games each week, and for the most part, they're all really good, and it's the best competition in the world.
But are you invested in the Giants? Are you really invested in the Giants?
Damn right I am. I put Eli Manning at number 10 on my fantasy football quarterback list, so I need to make sure that he finishes no lower than 10.
Plus, okay. With NFL, it's nice and compact. Like, maybe I don't care about the Giants, but I sure know more about them than I do USC's or Georgia's team this year.
Right, yep.
And it's easier to follow, and I like the way they decide a champion a lot better than I do the NCAA.
Yeah, no, like, the poll system is just horrifying.
I don't even like the conference thing. It's weird that no one's playing the same teams, and then we're deciding who's better based on that.
I'm not going to speak on same teams because I you know, my team is independent of a conference. But either way, let's move on to the next question. SGE asks, player most likely to fail his conditioning test?
I like that question, but I'm not sure. I don't know if I have an answer to it, but I like that question a lot.
Well, let's take a different question for SGE then.
We can throw something out there.
I got an answer. It's Don Mulbach, because he's probably been drinking ever since the
Jimmy Landis,
the beginning of May.
We still can't remember Jimmy Landis's name off the top of our heads.
I know Jimmy Landis's name. It's just I prefer to not say it.
Does Matt Prater have to take a conditioning test?
Probably. Did you think of Matt Prater because he mentioned drinking? Be honest.
I will not confirm or deny that. I wanted to say hello to
Nada.
I always want to add that G in there for some reason. But
a lot of Nada.
Yeah. Anyway, I wanted to say him, but I hear that he's actually kind of in shape right now and looking good.
In the best shape of his life. You can't see me doing the quotation marks, but I'm doing those.
But yeah, I that's a really, really good and tough question to answer.
We can jump
Do you want to answer the other one of SGE's questions then? He's got another one that I think is interesting. He says, after Slay, which Lions 2013 draftee are you locking up to an extension first?
Gotta be Ziggy.
It's gotta be Ziggy.
From
2013.
Oh. Yeah, it's gotta be Ansa, but that's just a boring answer because we're all gonna say it.
Yeah.
So who's your next guy that you would rather lock up?
Sam Martin.
Hold up. Did SGE drop us four questions?
Maybe.
We should answer all of them.
Yes,
well, that's such a good draft though. There are a lot of good options besides Ansa there. I mean, you've got Theo, you've got Devin Taylor, you've got Sam Martin, you've got Larry Warford. I mean, those are all guys that are still contributing quite a bit.
Quick hot take, I don't think that I would necessarily lock up any of those guys.
I agree.
I need to see another year out of Warford. I need to see another year out of Warford.
I mean, Sam Martin, why not lock him up? But then again, we can talk about a certain game that happened in Dallas. But then...
Or Cincy.
Stop. But no, I guess there's no reason why I'd want to, truly lock up any of those players. Like, why would I want to sign any of those players to, a 4 or 5 year deal?
I guess, but I find Theo Riddick maybe the least replaceable among the rest of the guys there.
I mean, isn't Abdullah supposed to do the same things?
Right?
Not catch.
He can catch the ball.
He can, but I haven't seen Abdullah unpants a linebacker like Theo has so far.
I think you might have to revisit the tape because I remember Abdullah making some pretty crazy catches in college.
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure that you were in person in San Diego when he undressed Eric Weddle. So
I said a linebacker.
That was the end of Eric Weddle in San Diego.
The end of Eric Weddle is when the Chargers wouldn't let him on the field during halftime to see his
daughter.
Some halftime performance.
Fuck the Chargers, man. What a god-awful franchise.
Go Chargers. Go.
Go Matt Damon.
All right, let's get to these other SGE questions. I answered his one about Ford Field serving breakfast food. They don't, but I had their brunch one time. It's not great.
This isn't an all-day McDonald's situation. What are they going to serve there?
They had a brunch. It was aight.
I mean, if they do serve breakfast, do you actually want to purchase breakfast?
I don't think I would want a concession style breakfast.
I don't want an $8 egg McMuffin.
Maybe one of those pancakes on a stick with the sausage inside.
Oh, shit.
Breakfast sandwich. I love
that. Oh, that's right. You bought one of those, Ryan. I forgot.
Yeah, I bought the Kroger brand. It was 99 cents for a blueberry pancake that was...
How long were you on the toilet? He's not answering. Okay, the other one he has, rank the Jason Bourne movies.
Oh, we are fielding this question.
Yes.
Like films all time or just rank the Jason Bourne movies?
Of the four movies, I'm not going to count the new Jason Bourne because we all haven't seen it yet, but of the four ones, I think Legacy has to go last, right? Because that was the only one without Matt Damon.
Right? Yeah, that one undoubtedly goes last.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember. Although I love Jeremy Renner, I just didn't see that movie.
A quick aside for that Bourne Legacy film. The first time I ever flew in an airplane, that was the in-flight film, and I'm pretty sure the opening scene to that film was him like shooting down a plane.
Hold up, you didn't fly in a film until you didn't fly in a plane until after 2012.
Yeah,
I also didn't fly in a plane until what? After 2012. Yep.
What?
Sorry, I'm not 30.
I'm not 30 yet.
Hey.
Not 30 yet.
I wasn't saying anything.
Fired.
All right, so we're saying Legacy is 4, and probably after Jason Bourne comes out, unless Jason Bourne just completely bombs, it's 5. So,
the only one I can remember is Ultimatum, so I guess I'll just put that number 1.
I remember 1A, 1B, 1C.
Yeah, the only one I really remember that well is Identity, and I really liked Identity. I think Bourne Identity like really changed action movies. Like, it completely rewrote the book on what an action movie should be, right?
Yeah, I mean,
Enemy of the State was better than all of them.
Okay,
what'd you say?
That was Jeremy's hot take. Say it one more time, but louder into the mic. Be a little more confident.
Enemy of the State better than all those movies.
Enemy of the State.
Okay, here's my hot take. I haven't seen any of the Bourne films, but they're better than any of the Bond films.
Are you including the Larry, whatever his name is?
Daniel Craig,
including the Daniel Craig,
especially those films.
Oh, I was going to say, because like the whole emphasis of Daniel, the whole like reason the Daniel Craig Bond movies exist was the Bond people were like, oh my God, we need Jason Bourne kicked our butts. We need to like model ourselves after that now.
Right. But then again, you can't
top 10 movie of all time.
You can't model a Bond film after Jason Bourne unless you have, you know, probably the best actor in Hollywood in your film.
Matt Damon.
Not getting into it. Not taking the bait.
So are we saying Identity 1 and then what would you say? No.
Has anyone even seen all of them?
I've seen 2 out of 4.
They're really good.
I think I've also.
You know what, SGE? I am going to go watch all 4 of the Jason Bourne movies sometime this weekend.
They're really good.
They're really good. They are part of Americana.
Ryan's never seen any.
Have you not seen any?
I haven't either.
What?
I think it's time to move on from the Bourne movies because we don't care.
We have talked way too much about the Bourne movies.
Fine. Good God. I hate
drinking gin until we pass out.
Joseph R. Sweeney wants to know, and this is kind of contingent on what we've been talking about all night, is going to training camp worth it? I mean, come on, man. We're talking about practice from our all-time favorite Detroit Piston, Mr. Iverson.
I don't even know if he was ever a Piston.
I'm really excited for training camp. I admitted earlier on this podcast that I've never been before, but I'm really excited for tomorrow. I think I'm going to have a lot of fun.
It's a celebration. I think that's kind of like for fans, yeah. If you're going, it's like it's a celebration. It's meaningless. I think at some point in sports, we're going to have to acknowledge that like the eternal hope of the offseason and not actually playing games worth in the standing have kind of almost overtaken the impending dread of actually playing games that matter and realizing that you're not probably as good as you think you are. But hey, man, you know, it's a celebration. It's end of July, beginning of August.
Yeah, I think going to, especially to the first one on Friday, that's got to be kind of a fun environment to be a part of. But, and this is a good question for Alex, do you realistically think you can take anything from training camp that is of value about the team? Do you learn anything about the team?
I would say you have to take everything with a grain of salt, because like you could see Matthew Stafford improving and that's only going to mean that your secondary sucks on that play. So it's so hard to actually get something from training camp. You can see like if these players are moving better than they were last year, maybe, or if they look like they're more in shape, but like it's especially the first few days, like these guys probably won't even have pads on, or I don't even know. Maybe there are practices that they're, I mean, maybe they will have pads on all these practices, but it's just so hard to tell, man.
So for you, it's more of a just kind of celebrating, watching the team again compete.
Yeah. I mean, football's back. So,
okay. Let's see. Here we go. Question from Dave Marshall. What do you think of finding a way to get Nick Foles as a backup to Matt Stafford?
He's not going to back up Matt Stafford because he's going to start over Teddy Bridgewater.
I don't think he would.
Shout out Arif Hassan from Daily Norseman, who has been just fighting the hordes of Mongols at his mentions on Twitter.
Yeah, just so everyone is clear, there was one report from one reporter saying that the Vikings are thinking about adding him, and they've told Foles that he would compete for the number one job, which nobody
biggest
believes.
Biggest lie in the world, if that's actually true.
Yeah, Nick Foles had one blind squirrel season, and he had trouble beating Case Keenum on the Houston roster.
Can we talk about that blind squirrel season, please? Please,
it's like Rams roster though, right?
Yeah, Rams. Wasn't it 27 touchdowns, 2 interceptions?
Yeah, but can we talk about how weird that 2 interceptions thing is? Because there was like about 8 different times where he should have been picked off, but the ball just bounced off the hands of a corner instead. Like, he should have had like 10 interceptions that season. And it was like, it was the weirdest, most outlier statistical season I think anyone could ever have.
But it wasn't even like anybody even believed in it either, because he got traded after that season.
That's, yes.
For Sam Bradford.
For Sam Bradford.
There were some, like, my friend writes for the Eagles, and there were definitely some fans out there that were just completely
eating it all up.
And, yeah.
But, it, I mean, if we want to really address the question here, I'm sorry, Lions fans, but Dan Orlovsky's your backup quarterback. You're going to have to deal with it.
Not Jake Rudock, Dano.
I'm holding out hope for Jimmy Clausen. Dan Orlovsky is so bad. He's so bad. No, come on.
You know who's even worse?
Dan Orlovsky's bad.
Did you just hit me with a Jimmy Clausen?
He's below average. I wouldn't even call him bad. He's just Dan Orlovsky.
There is not a worse backup quarterback in football, guys.
But here's the thing about Nick Foles is that
it's
someone.
Not true.
Here's the thing about Nick Foles, because he had a good year as a starter. Someone somewhere in like September is going to see, like, you will see it. Andrew Luck will get hurt, or Tony Romo will get hurt. Those two always get hurt. It's going to be one of those two, or maybe Joe Flacco. I don't know. Someone on a bad
team. Quarterbacks don't get hurt.
Thank you. He was hurt last year. We know
that's a fairy tale.
Okay. We didn't see Jimmy Clausen start over. Oh, why am I doing this with you people? Look.
Oh, Jimmy Clausen.
What do you mean, you people?
Jimmy Clausen. Yeah, what do you mean, you people?
Okay. Either way, what I'm saying is some team somewhere is going to see their main quarterback hurt, and they are going to go out, panic, because they realize their backup is some idiot McCown brother, like not even like a Josh or a Luke McCown. It's going to be like a Dave McCown, who we didn't even know existed until now. And they are going to go out and sign Nick Foles. That's what's going to happen. He's not going to be content to be a backup until he has just been beaten into submission.
I'm hijacking the podcast right now. Would you rather have Dan Orlovsky or EJ Manuel?
Can I take a bullet to the head?
I mean, that's going to be your answer for a lot of
these. I guess you have to take EJ Manuel.
Well,
it depends.
No, like, I think.
Or would you rather have Cardell Jones, because he's the third on their depth?
Okay, I take Jones.
Lions, though.
I like, take Cardell Jones, but I'm an idiot.
What we're forgetting is that Dan Orlovsky is probably the only one on the roster right now, other than Stafford, that knows the playbook front to back, and that's pretty important.
But you got
to
give Jake Rudock a chance.
Divorce yourself from that. I'm talking strictly talent.
Okay, if you have talent, then I'm taking Cardell Jones, EJ Manuel, and maybe even Christian Hackenberg, for Christ's sake.
Oh, no. We're not taking Christian. We are not taking the Hackenberg.
We're talking about talent, like.
No, Christian Hackenberg has none.
But, when we're going back to the discussion here with Foles, let me steal a Mr. Robot quote. Sorry, this is a spoiler for the most recent episode. Better take the devil that you know than the one you don't.
The devil we know, like, presides over the eighth ring of hell. Like, this is really hard.
Well, yeah, we're talking about backup quarterbacks. That is the eighth ring of hell.
But we're talking about a backup quarterback that ran out of the end of the end zone
And your answer for any backup quarterback is going to be like what Chris said. I'd rather take a bullet to the head, but I would rather have. Oh man, I just saw the Cowboys backup quarterback, and I'm not going to say it.
No, let's hear it. Let's hear you say
Say his name.
I would rather have Kellen Moore.
Oh, good God.
You are so full of shit.
I would rather have Colt McCoy.
No, you wouldn't.
I'd rather have Brian Hoyer, and that's a goddamn thing.
I would rather have
John Cena.
But he's still alive.
So the guy, so Sweater Dipshit from Blue's Clues is still alive.
What? Don't call him Sweater Dipshit.
See, what's his name? Chris, what's his name? What's his name?
Now you're being too loose.
What is his name?
There were two guys.
Yeah,
there were
two guys.
Hold up. Wait. Before we even get to the mailbag, wait, there were two guys?
They changed up like
what?
Halfway through.
Oh, I don't remember the first guy's name, but I think the second guy's name was Joe.
Joe was the original guy.
I do not recognize. Steve, I do not recognize this post-Steve Blue's Clues universe.
Wait, Steve was the OG?
Yes, he was the OG with the sweater, the green striped sweater.
Well, I think they both did.
The show really fell off after Steve departed.
Did Steve, was Steve doing coke? Is that why he had to depart?
I think there was something wrong with him. Yeah, like he got
He was doing drugs.
Guys, come
was
on,
he
this
diddling?
Is wild speculation right now.
I swear to God.
The show got so unrealistic after a while. It's like, all right, salt and pepper shakers are talking, sure.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You're talking like a clock and a refrigerator.
Didn't they introduce a second dog? Didn't they introduce a second dog, like the pink dog? Like, she stopped being
girl.
Like...
Magenta. It was a girl.
Magenta. She stopped being like this one thing that came by all the time, and it was like, hey, she's now a permanent feature of the show?
Guys.
I can't believe we're talking about this.
Blue was a girl, and Magenta was a guy.
What?
Yes.
Blue was a girl.
My world is. Let's get to the mailbag.
Did they like?
I just blew your minds.
Did they make babies and like teach kids about combining colors?
No, they can't make babies. They were both neutered. You should spay and neuter your pets.
All right.
Bob Barker told me that.